Hey guys, this is Jason. Have you checked out our Increase store? It's over at theincrease.com. It's a great place to go if you're looking for a Bible study or a devotional to go through with you and your friends and your team. Check it out. Over at the Bible studies and books area at theincrease.com, we got a 52-week devotional. We have Bible studies on the book of James, the book of 1 John, and the book of 1 Peter. These are Bible studies, by the way, that the athletes themselves, those in the world of baseball, the world of hockey, the world of football, have actually gone through together as a team. You can go through those same devotionals together as well, those Bible studies, by ordering at theincrease.com. Check it out. Bible studies, devotionals, great resources. You can even get some Sports Spectrum swag over there at theincrease.com.
Welcome into the Sports Spectrum Podcast, where we bring Jesus into the sports conversation. Here's your host for today, Jason Romano.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. I am Jason. This is the Sports Spectrum Podcast, and you can find us at our website, sportsspectrum.com, for all of our content, articles, devotionals, podcasts, lots of great free resources, talking about Jesus, talking about sports. Check it out every day at sportsspectrum.com. Benjamin Watson, he's the man, and he joins us here today on Sports Spectrum. He's our guest on the show today. Ben's been on quite a few times recently, probably two or three times over the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. Ben is a longtime NFL tight end. He's been a great friend of mine for many years. He came into the league in 2004 with the Patriots, finished out his career with the Patriots, but he also played for the Browns, the Saints, the Ravens, caught passes from Tom Brady and Drew Brees, caught 44 touchdowns, 547 career receptions. He was the Bart Starr Award winner in 2018. And oh, by the way, he's also a very well-in-demand speaker. He's a broadcaster, and he's a three-time author. He wrote his first book called Under Our Skin in 2015. He wrote a book about becoming a new dad, The New Dad's Playbook, in 2017. Both are amazing books to read and will encourage you in different ways, I think. And this latest book that he's written, it comes out June 20th. It's called The New Fight, Roe, Race, and a Pro-Life Commitment to Justice. Benjamin doesn't hold back here. And this is a conversation that I don't think we've had a lot of previously on Sports Spectrum, where we kind of go into issues like this, hot button issues, if you will. But Ben is such an intelligent guy. The conversations that I've always had with him, including this one that you're about to listen to, always encourage me, always make me think. A little disclaimer here for you listening. If you have kids, I don't think there's anything that kids can't hear in our conversation. But if you don't want them listening, just because it might spark questions and conversations about something that maybe you're not ready to talk about with them, just know that that might be the case here. I don't think it's anything you need to turn the radio off or turn the stereo off or whatever, wherever you're listening to your podcast on, if they're in the room. But just know that it might spark a question or two if they're listening to this type of conversation, because we go to some places that we don't normally go to in our discussion here today. But I tell you, if you don't walk away encouraged after listening to this conversation with Benjamin Watson, I will be very, very surprised. The new book is called The New Fight for Life, and Benjamin Watson is our guest right now on Sports Spectrum. Take a listen. It's always good to welcome back our friend Benjamin Watson to Sports Spectrum. What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Always great to join you. Good seeing you every now and then throughout the year, so yes. Excited to join you for this time.
Yeah, you have this new book, it's coming out June 20th, The New Fight, Roe, Race, and a Pro-Life Commitment to Justice, and all you gotta do is say the topic and the subtitle, and it's like, whoa, Benjamin Watson's writing a book on this. He did not hold back. We're gonna dive into that book in a second, but I was thinking about this, I don't know if you remember this, the first time we ever met. And we didn't talk about this on the other podcast. Do you remember coming to the car wash or coming to ESPN to do the car wash? I figured you did.
Yeah.
I think you were still with Cleveland, maybe, or you just gone from New England to Cleveland. How did 2009, 2010?
Yeah, about a decade ago. I mean, you know, that would have been, I think I was, yeah, I think you're right. I was in Cleveland. So I got to Cleveland in 2010, was there until 2013. And I remember going to the car wash. And then, what's this thing, the car wash? What is it called? Well, you actually go through all these different shows, almost like a car wash, where you get a little bit of this show, a little bit of that show. You're there for the entire day. And you were the one who, you know, setting everything up. At that point in time, you were running talent, right?
I was one of the
Over at
talent
ESPN.
producers and hosted you that day. Basically spent the day walking you around. So I remember that
I
day. It
remember
was
that.
interesting to kind of think about how our paths have crossed and all the different ministry work that we've done together since then, and
I
had no
know.
idea back in 2010 or 2011 what was going on.
It's amazing what God does, and it's amazing just how, you know, you open up different chapters of your life, and you have no idea what he's going to do. You have no idea how people are going to cross your path or what type of ministry you can be involved with people. I mean, you know, we're just, as people are listening to this, we're just a few weeks, you know, or I guess as they listen, a few months after our conference, our Pro Athlete Outreach Conference, where, you know, you play a prominent role in that, as well as Kirsten and I. So, no, I could have never envisioned this guy at ESPN who I was like nervous. You know, I'm so nervous going on these shows and everything. And then, you know, to be where we are now is just a testament to really the faithfulness of God, man.
Well, how about at that time, if I had told you that you would be a three-time author, would you have laughed at me?
Yes, definitely. I definitely would have. Another thing that just never thought would happen. But again, I think it's exciting, right? It's exciting to be able to delve into different areas and to try new things and talk about issues, whether it's fatherhood or faith or family, race, you know, current events, to be able to talk about those things that impact all of us in some sort of way. Even though you're an athlete, we're not immune to so much of, you know, the trials and tribulations of just being human beings and just trying to live life and do it well.
Your first 5 years or so you spent with the Patriots and then went to Cleveland for three, New Orleans, and then the Ravens. And certainly watching your career, and you know, I think the longer you're in the league, the more comfortable you can go from being like a younger guy to, you know, sort of an established player to a veteran to the old guy, you know, when you're at the end of your career. Where did or when did you start having, or did you, I guess, start having conversations that weren't just football or surface level conversations? Because I remember when you wrote that Facebook post, I had used that as an example for so many years to different athletes when I was working with them in terms of coaching them on broadcasting about, you know, you can have a voice here and you don't have to just go on a national TV, you know, network to talk about football. Like you could actually have a voice and talk about other things. And you did that on that Monday night Facebook post. And feel free to share that story if you want to. But did you have conversations in the locker room early in your career about topics like race or, you know, even the pro-life movement, things like that?
You know, not as many. And I think part of it is, you know, as a young player coming to the league, you've got all these expectations for yourself. Other people have them for you as well. And I was in New England. So, Jason, you already know the way media operates in New England and the way that Coach Belichick has everybody on the same talking points. And I mean, I wasn't about to say anything outside of working every day to get better. You know, the great team win.
110%.
Exactly. You know, all the things was what I was focused on, especially as a young player. I will say that even then, though, our locker room was not immune to what was happening. Now, fortunately for us, during that time, I can't think of any of those kind of lightning rod moments that we've had over the last, you know, several years. Although I'm sure they were happening, you know, we're just so inundated with what I was focusing on. But there are always conversations about, you know, kids, you know, marriage, life, you know, current events come up, those sorts of things. I think when I left New England, though, got to Cleveland, and then especially got to New Orleans, started to grow in, I guess, maturity as a man. You know, by the time I got to New Orleans, I had four kids. You know what I'm saying?
That'll
And
mature you.
exactly, had kids. You know, had been married for several years, and started to get more in touch with, I think during that point in time, the communities where we were living. As opposed to, for much of the time in New England, the first part of my time there was really just trying to figure out the playbook and not mess up. And then having opportunity kind of to get engulfed in the community with our kids, with my wife, with our foundation, all those sorts of things. And then, you know, you mentioned it in 2014 when Michael Brown was killed by the officer in St. Louis. And then a year later, you know, in 2015, when the grand jury decided not to indict the officer, you can remember all the protests and those sorts of things, and just writing my feelings that have been bubbling up for some time and really reaching back even to things that happened in my childhood that you don't really realize impacted you until you see something happening on television and the emotions that connect with that. And still, Jason, there's still this fear and trepidation many times in sharing as an athlete something that is perhaps going to be controversial or outside of the realm of sport.
Yeah.
Because you represent not only yourself, you represent your family, you represent your God, you represent the city that you play in. You also represent your other teammates who have a variety of different perspectives on things. So you have to be mindful of that. And I was scared to even push send on that Facebook post.
Yeah.
But I did. And I tell you what, the doors opened. And what's really tremendous, what really warms my heart the most is even when other players would have come up and say, man, I was thinking that same thing, but I just didn't know quite how to say it. We are so complex as individuals, much beyond our occupation, whatever that occupation is. We have so much to offer. We have so many thoughts and emotions on different issues that occur that sometimes we relegate ourselves only to our occupation. And not that that's bad. We should dive in 100%, but also realize that, man, expressing ourselves and expressing our thoughts, there's great value in that.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, too, the timing. I think when you think back to 2015 and writing that, and then everything we didn't know, but a year later when you had a political divide that seemed to be so high, and you know, continuing to see sort of racial conversations, race conversations, I should say, and certainly 2020 took that to a level we hadn't seen in a very long time in our country. I don't know. It was just interesting as you're writing that, because I have to imagine, obviously, that opened up a lot of doors for you. I mean, your first book, in essence, correct me if I'm wrong, came from writing that Facebook post, right? But then also the conversations that had to have taken place after that, I would imagine, with teammates and other people in the locker room.
Yeah, definitely. I remember walking in the locker room and somebody said to me, man, my grandma told me that you wrote something and I need to go ask you what it was you wrote. So my Facebook post about, you know, being angry, but being introspective and being hopeless, but yet hopeful, you know, when it comes to issues of race in America, racialized violence in America, specifically against Black people, and just my emotions about it, I think touched a lot. But to your point, it was an on-ramp and a bridge to have deeper conversations with people in the locker room and outside the locker room, and to speak on these issues. And ultimately, I think as believers, it's not that we're immune to what happens in the world. It's not that, you know, the world is going to be perfect for us as believers. We're going to have, you know, trials living in this world. There's going to be disappointments. There's going to be fear. There's going to be anger, all those sorts of things. We rest in the hope of the gospel and in the understanding that in the new heaven and new earth, all these things will pass away, but it doesn't change our directives to bring justice and peace and mercy on the earth while we're living in it. And so we live in this weird juxtaposition between what's happening now and what's going to be, while still being ambassadors of Christ while we do it. And ultimately, we seek to open up avenues to the gospel as we talk about current events, faithfully, truthfully, honestly. And that's led to a lot of other difficult conversations, you know, that are issues that people deal with. A lot of times we just don't want to talk about
them. Yeah, they say you don't talk about race, you don't talk about religion, you don't talk about certainly abortion. Well, you know, Benjamin Watson talks about these things because he's writing books about them. You at least wrote a book about parenting that we can all relate to, right?
Exactly.
But those race conversations.
That was a good one. That one was like, less stress. I need to do more of those less stress books. Like my next book is, I told you this before, I was like, the next book's going to be like 7 steps to being, you know, a better leader, a better friend, a better man. That's something right. Like a little less controversial.
Yeah, because it's not that they're... I actually really like that you go to these topics, because I think we all need to have conversations, even if we disagree. We need to have more conversations with people about the things that really truly are going on and things that really truly matter. Certainly faith being at the forefront of why we even do this show with Sports Spectrum. But you, okay, so June 20th, 2023, your book comes out. It's The New Fight for Life, and it's almost a year to the day of June 24th, 2022, which is kind of how you start this book. Go back to that day. That was the day Roe v. Wade was overturned. And just maybe think about, and maybe you were already thinking about writing this book at that time. I don't know. That'll be a part of your answer here. But what was kind of going through your mind that day? And I remember what took place after it. And I had so much empathy for people on both sides. I really did, because there was so much anger on one side and happiness on the other. And I'm like, I don't want to fall in the line of either. I was happy, but also very sad for a lot of people who were very angry, who were friends of mine. What was that day like for you?
I felt very similar. You know, June 24th, 2022, it was a day that we kind of anticipated because of the Supreme Court leak that happened a few months prior.
Yeah.
That Roe may be being overturned. And when it actually happened, there was a sense of relief. There was a sense of happiness, because for 50 something years, you've had activists of all generations, all ethnicities, all occupations that have been advocating for life in various sectors. And then to have this happen was like, wow, I can't believe I couldn't believe it actually happened.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there was concern for those who were hurt, who felt like their rights were being taken away, like they really felt, you know, this pain that they were being that their feelings were being trivialized, or that they were being targeted. And so there was this compassion and empathy that I had for these people. Although as a pro-lifer, I don't agree.
Right.
As a human being, you saw just the pain that so many people were going through. So it was kind of this balance. I think for me, the immediate thing that I thought was, okay, what's next?
Mm-hmm.
Roe v. Wade has been overturned. This has been what has been targeted really for the last 50 years since it's been enacted back in the early 70s, repealing Roe v. Wade. But okay, now that's done. So what now? What do we do now? What's changed now? And no, I did not plan on writing this book. For us, and for Kirsten and I, my wife, over the last probably 3 years or so, I've done a lot of speaking at pro-life events. Kirsten and I have donated ultrasounds to different pregnancy resource centers as part of a vision that she had years ago when we had our first child back in 2009. We had a 3D-40 ultrasound. And she wanted to one day be able to offer that service to pregnant women. And so we've been doing that over the last few years.
Hmm.
I actually work for an organization called Human Coalition, and we provide direct services for pregnant women, and we engage on state, local, federal legislation. But I still wasn't thinking about writing on this topic until I started having conversations with many pro-lifers, pro-choicers, people in between. And the question was, okay, what's going to happen now? What's next? And as someone who cares about life, I thought this book would be kind of a roadmap for people who consider themselves to be pro-life, who want to take care of preborn children and mothers and fathers, but feel kind of like, okay, that fight is over. What do we do now? And I talk a lot in the book about justice.
Yeah.
Because I believe this next frontier, this next fight for life, this new fight for life is one that will have to center on justice for preborn children, for mothers, for communities that are vulnerable. The driving factors of abortion, Jason, aren't changing because Roe has been repealed.
Right. It's still there.
They're just not.
Yeah.
The economic problems, the housing insecurity, the relational problems with fathers or significant others, the systemic, the healthcare issues, the prenatal, postnatal healthcare issues, those things aren't changing because the Supreme Court decided to repeal Roe. And so the reasons why I wrote the book was to say, okay, all right, pro-lifers, which I am one of you, how do we as people of faith, how do we as people who love life enter into this new phase to reduce the necessity some people feel for abortion while also making it unthinkable? And that's going to take a whole lot more work in many respects than simply repealing Roe, because to be honest with you, abortion is still legal in 75% of America. Repealing Roe just sent it back to the states. And so there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah. That book is called The New Fight for Life. It's coming out in a few weeks on June 20th, 2023 with Benjamin Watson, who's our guest here on Sports Spectrum. Something that I highlighted from what you wrote, and it goes to the chapter called Have a Little Empathy, which I kind of laughed at when I first read it. I'm like, no, we're all supposed to have a lot of empathy. But I understood when I read the chapter what you meant. I just want to read your words for a minute and just kind of have you expand on those if you could. You talk about, and you're getting ready to talk about the Good Samaritan, and you write that no matter the circumstances, we should all have an emotional response when we see human suffering. The plight of others should invoke our sympathy, compassion, and concern. But too often, our minds fill in the blanks in a way that caters to our biases instead of allowing our hearts to address the pain point first. Callousness is not becoming of people who call themselves believers. In fact, it is blatant disobedience and the evidence of a heart grown cold. I highlighted that when I read that, and I thought, wait a minute here. This is exactly, I think, what we see playing out. I don't know if it's just from the political world, but it feels like it's also a social media thing. I don't know too many people when I talk to them face to face that act like this, like what you just wrote, but I see it on display a lot, especially in the social media world. And I'll say it, especially over the last 5 or 6 years, where everything feels like it's more divided. Why that? Like, why was that so important to write? Especially, it felt like you were writing this at the bottom part there. It's not becoming of people who call themselves believers. So you're also talking to a lot of people who listen to this podcast who are believers.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think it was, I recall it from President George Bush, him saying something to the effect of many times we identify or think the worst of people that aren't in our group, but we think the best of ourselves. Yeah. And so if people aren't like us for whatever reason, we'll fill in the narrative about them and their pathology and how bad they are when they've done the exact same thing that we did, but we look at ourselves, people like us, as just exceptions mm-hmm. to the rule. Empathy, in many ways, is putting yourself in someone else's shoes. It's perhaps not actually knowing their experience because you haven't really been there, but you try your very best to understand and feel how they would feel in a certain situation. Specifically when it gets to the issue of abortion. And I talk about this a lot in the book. There's a statistic out there that Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely than their white counterparts to have abortion. Immediately that hits all of us in some way. Part of the reason why I wrote the book was because I kept hearing that statistic used over and over again by many pro-lifers who I know and love, but we never get to the next. We never get to the why. We never unpack, okay, if that's the case, why might that be? Why might this group in particular be more vulnerable to the stain of abortion? And throughout the book, I talk about some history. I talk about some eugenics, but I also talk about some American history and some American discrimination and some things that are ongoing right now in 2023 that impact the Black community in very specific targeted ways. And so going back to that quote, talking about empathy, maybe that's not the community you live in. Maybe you don't identify with them. Maybe you're not a woman, you're a man. Maybe you're a believer and you know some folks who aren't believers who got abortion, although 4 in 10 women who get abortions go to church regularly. And so that also means probably 4 in 10 men do as well. So they're sitting, it's not out there, church, it's in here. So how do we have empathy for people that we may have never experienced what they've experienced or done what they've done, but as believers, we know there's now no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. Yeah. And we know that stories can be redeemed. and we understand all those sort of things, sorts of things. How do we walk that out? There is a lot of that, and you know, I'm not one to say that social media is like all bad. You know, some people are saying social media is from the pit of hell. Like, you know, it's terrible. It's the death of all of us.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily believe that because I think there's a lot of good that can come from it for sure. I'm a living testament of that. I mean, you can use it for good. You can use it for bad, just like anything else in the history of mankind. But I will say certain platforms lend themselves more often to doing exactly what you read in the quote, not having empathy, attacking, not unpacking complex thoughts, not hearing the full heart of someone because you just don't have enough characters to do so.
Yeah.
So we do have to be careful and fight against that as individuals, and especially I think as believers, because, and you know, I'm guilty of this too. We don't just represent ourselves; we represent other believers, and most importantly, we represent the Lord.
So when you do have those conversations, and maybe they've only happened on social media, but I think probably you've had lots of conversations in person with people who disagree with you, maybe even screamed at you. I don't know if you're standing up for something like this, the opposition can be pretty vocal and pretty passionate as well. How have you handled those conversations that have come to you with people who strongly disagree with you on some of this stuff?
The first thing is to listen. You know, the Bible talks about, you know, a harsh answer, you know, stoking wrath, and a kind answer, in so many words, turning away wrath. And I think that that's so true. I was in the airport not too long ago. I was actually working on the book, Jason. I was working on the book. I was sitting in, you know, an area in the airport, and I had my computer out. I was about to fly somewhere, and I was reviewing one of the chapters. And this woman who worked for the airline, you know, walks up to me, and she asked me, what was I doing? Because I'd been sitting there for a while because my flight was, I think, delayed. So I was sitting there for a while. She walks up to me and asks me what I'm doing. I was like, well, I'm working on my book. She's like, what's your book about? Oh. So my book is about Roe v. Wade, race, pro-life, and justice. And so she kind of looks at me. I was like, you want to talk about it? So so we start talking. We start having this conversation. And she is, you know, she would identify herself as pro-choice. Mm-hmm. She was probably about a 30-ish, 40-ish, probably about 40-ish-year-old Black lady. I was in Atlanta in the airport. And, you know, she had different views on this topic specifically than I did. And she told me why. I asked her questions. Why do you feel this way? Would you ever say it's okay for a woman to get an abortion or not to have an abortion? Like, where do we draw the line? What do you think about this policy or that policy? You know, we had all these conversations. And she went from being, how could you, you know, write this book from that perspective to, okay, I don't know if I agree with everything, but I respect where you're coming from. And it was largely because we had the opportunity to converse. I had an opportunity to affirm her humanity and her point of view, and say that she's valid in many ways, and offer some empathy. But it happened because it was a longer conversation. It wasn't a tweet back and forth. And I think also what happened because we both entered with a certain respect, I think, for each other as human beings. And in everything that I talk about, and, you know, even, you know, books on fatherhood or race, I think a lot of it starts there with seeing the humanity in other people. And so, you know, some of the conversations don't go that well. I remember having a conversation at the Supreme Court several years ago with some women from a pro-abortion group, and it was a little quicker. But one thing I don't want people to be able to say is that I, or believers, dehumanize them. And that's part of the message, I think, in the book, is that as pro-lifers, half our battle is how we talk about the other side.
Yes.
And by the other side, I don't just mean those who have had abortions. I mean those who are advocating for them as well. we live in a time where it's so easy to denigrate, and our emotions make us want to do that. But how we speak about people that are against us in different ways, I think that matters long term.
I've heard somebody say, and I don't remember where I heard it, but they said, as believers, when we're criticizing people who sin differently than us, we're doing it wrong. And I love the way he said that. He said, you're criticizing someone who sins differently than you do. Now, I'm not advocating clearly for abortion here at all.
Exactly.
But I think just having a mindset to remember, you said it earlier when you were talking about how we view ourselves versus how we view others. I think if we just remember that the brokenness of all humanity exists, it allows us to see people who've made those mistakes. And, you know, you can call it an abortion, a mistake, or whatever you want to call it, but it's there and people make those decisions and go down that road. But I've made decisions and gone down roads that I'm not proud of either. But hopefully, first of all, the grace of God, but hopefully you and me, as we talk, you'll see that in me, that I'm just a guy trying to live my life too. And I think it changes the game when we have our conversations like that.
Exactly. And there's purpose in pain, and there can be a mission that comes out of your mess. Yeah. And I think specifically when it comes to the church, and you know, there's a part of the book where I talk about, you know, the church and what the church needs to do and how the church can be involved. And in many churches, this issue isn't even talked about so often.
Right.
As believers, we understand redemption. Now, we understand that a lot of times the places, as you mentioned, where you have sinned the worst, many times become your places of power. And I've seen in this journey of the last 5 years or so, meeting with so many pro-life groups around the country, that a lot of times those strong advocates, those women who are able to speak so fluently and powerfully about this topic, this part of their story. But what happened was somebody was willing to treat them as valuable human beings and love on them and say, you know what, that happened, but it doesn't define you. It doesn't define you. And there can be great ministry out of that painful place and out of that terrible place that you went through. And oh, by the way, if you go back there and back there and back there and back there again, it still doesn't diminish your value as a human being before God. You know, much of this conversation, Jason, has to do with the image of God and the fact that we are, although that image has been marred by sin, we are image bearers of our Creator. And that gives us infinite value that doesn't change from our stage of development or our location or our ability or even our ethnicity. That doesn't change. It's been given to us by God. And so part of the conversation for pro-lifers and the reasons why this book, I believe, is so important is also reminding us that this isn't a side issue. It's been drawn into the political spectrum. And so many times, you know, depending on what side of the aisle you're on, you speak about it a certain way. But as believers, this issue is important to the heart of God. It should be important to us. We're talking about image bearers. And from womb to tomb in this new fight for life, you know, how are we going to protect and honor and serve image bearers of God? No matter what stage of development they're in, or no matter what we think or we assume about those people.
Yeah, that's really well said. The new book, again, The New Fight for Life, is coming out in a few weeks on June 20th. You can pick it up. Benjamin Watson is the author. He's been our guest. I have one more question for you, and this is just one I was thinking about as you were answering, because we think about protesters, and what we'll see on the news or on social media is one side holding up signs, screaming at the other side, holding up signs and screaming at one side versus the other. And I was at the Super Bowl, I guess back in February, it was in Phoenix. I don't know if you were there at all, but I was there, and I'm fortunate with Sports Spectrum that they allow us to go and cover, you know, the Super Bowl and interview some different players. But every single year, it feels like I'm walking downtown, and it's usually a very big city, and you're walking right in the heart of a downtown of a city, and you see people with, you know, the megaphones or the blowhorns or whatever they're called, you know, talking about different things. And quite often you see street preachers, people reading from God's word. I'm sure you've seen these, and sharing the gospel, but often screaming and yelling and almost trying to to scare people into, you know, where they might be going if they don't, you know, trust in Jesus. Do you believe that that type of preaching, screaming, and not just from a preaching perspective, but maybe it comes down to even protesting, because we've seen the protesting that's taken place over the last 3 years. Is that truly effective? And I guess we'll start with the gospel part, because I don't know anyone who I've ever spoken to who's ever come to faith in Christ because of a guy on the street in the big city. Now, maybe there were seeds planted. Every single person I've talked to either had a really difficult season of life and they just didn't know where to turn, or they met someone like I did when I was 25 and my brother Chris sat down with me and I watched him live his life and that became attractive to me and I said yes to Jesus then. I don't know. I'm just curious from someone like you who's really into, you know, standing up for, you know, something pretty strong in your life, where your thoughts are on that.
That is a great question. That's a great question. You know, immediately when you start talking about street preacher, I started thinking about Isaiah or Jeremiah or some of these Old Testament prophets who God directed to go speak. And I have to believe that they were speaking loudly. They were saying things in public places that people didn't want to hear, but that those messages were given to them by God for that specific time. And most of the people didn't listen. If they did, it was later on, but they were being obedient.
Yeah. Even Jesus, right?
You know,
when you look at his ministry.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I don't know that there's a defined answer for that. I do think that there are some people, as you mentioned, who hear the word and the seed is planted, or possibly the seed does more than plant. It actually grows and produces fruit from something that they heard on the street. I also think that for some people, they're immediately turned off. For some people, they're immediately offended. But specifically when it comes to the preaching, I also think that there is a cultural dynamic to all of this. And so in Arizona at the Super Bowl, with somebody yelling and preaching on the side of the road, do those people get it? I don't know. If you're in another area of the world and somebody's standing on the street corner and somebody starts preaching and yelling and screaming, are those people culturally conditioned to receive the word of God in that way? Maybe more so than we are in different parts of the country here. And so
sure.
I don't know, because I've always felt like, man, ain't nobody listening to you. But but there are also people who get saved in that way.
Maybe.
You know, there are also people who hear in that way.
Yeah.
I do think, however, that there is a way that we speak and a way that we preach and teach and condemn or not condemn from that bully pulpit, right? Yeah. And so what they're saying and how they're saying is very important. Let's extrapolate that out to just protesting in general.
Mm-hmm.
You have to disrupt. One of the principles of protesting is to disrupt.
Right.
Right? You have to disrupt. And so whether you're talking about the gospel or we're talking about abortion or we're talking about voting rights or women's rights, whatever it is, there has to be some sort of disruption. And so while that disruption is comfortable, many times that's what gets people thinking and open them for what you mentioned, which is more the relational conversations. I also say this last thing. Somebody once told me, don't judge entire movements by their most extreme activists.
Yes.
And so
yeah.
Many times, especially on social or when people are protesting and screaming or holding up pictures that are grotesque and those sorts of things, we'll judge the entire movement by those people. But usually those are the people, not necessarily on the fringes, but those are the small minority of people. And we have to be careful many times in grouping all folks who are under one label, under the people that we see on TV or we see protesting or have the biggest platforms, and the way that they express their viewpoints can be quite different than others. Because I've been guilty of lumping people in.
Sure.
And, you know, and most of the folks aren't like that. Well, but no, I don't have a defined answer for that question. I mean,
yeah.
I guess the only thing I'm breaking the law out there.
Yeah, no, I think it's just worth thinking about. That's all. It's more of a, yeah. I don't even know if there's a right or a wrong answer. It's just more of a discussion point or an opinion.
Yeah.
But you just mentioned being lumped in. I'm sure you, when you speak about race, might be even lumped in one corner. And if you're speaking about abortion or against abortion, you're suddenly lumped in another corner.
Yeah, I don't have any friends, dude. You're like my only friend, to be honest, because like Twitter lets me know exactly like what I said. And which side of the aisle I should be on.
I know. It does all the time. I've been there a little bit, not as much as you, but I've had people call me and say, wait, you're a Christian, but you don't agree with this or think that. And I'm like, yeah, actually, let's have that conversation.
How could you be a Democrat? How could you be a Republican? Like, you just called me a Democrat. Am I a Republican now? Which one am I?
Wait, you're a born again Christian, but you maybe didn't vote for, you know, a specific candidate. What are you doing?
Anyways,
well, listen, people need to go get the new book. Ben, this has been awesome. I always appreciate conversation with you. The New Fight for Life, people can go get it. It's out June 20th, available everywhere books are found. And I'll be seeing you soon, my friend. It's always good to catch up.
Man, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for what you're doing. And I look forward to seeing you, bro. Thank you.
Many thanks again to our friend Benjamin Watson for being our guest today on Sports Spectrum and his new book coming out June 20th, The New Fight, Roe, Race, and a Pro-Life Commitment to Justice. You can get it on Amazon or everywhere you can find books. It comes out in June. But I wanted to have this conversation before the book came out for a variety of reasons. But one, I believe when the book comes out, Ben's going to be pretty busy because he is talking about a topic that I think is going to spark a lot of conversation, whether you agree or disagree with him, on a lot of different media outlets, certainly on social media. So I wanted to have this conversation before that kind of got a little crazy for him, which is why we're releasing this a few weeks before the book releases. But also, I just think that a lot of what he had to say was really relatable as a follower of Christ, who's also a guy who stands for, you know, life from the womb to the tomb. He stands against race and he stands against injustices. And really, as followers of Christ, we should be in agreement on all of that, that we should stand for all of that. And it feels like if you're on social media, if you watch any of the cable news networks, that if you, you know, believe in or advocate for one thing, that you're automatically against something else. Or if you say you're a Christian, you're automatically lumped into a certain side of whatever. And I don't want to ever be that way. Like, I want to be able to talk to people and have conversations with people who disagree with me. I have family members, very close family members of mine who I love dearly, who disagree with me on a lot of different topics and issues. And yet I want to still love them and I want to still have a relationship with them and I want to still be able to spend time with them. So I don't know. I think what Ben had to say was really one of those little reminders for myself and hopefully for you listening as well to just remember who Jesus is and how he loved people. And I thought Benjamin was great today on the podcast. Again, his new book, The New Fight, comes out June 20th. Go get a copy and pre-order one today. We appreciate you for tuning in and checking us out here at Sports Spectrum. Not every conversation is going to be like the one we just had, but we do try to intersect the sports world with conversations about Jesus and about faith. And I think Benjamin is the perfect example of the type of guest that we want to have here as often as possible on Sports Spectrum. Check out our website, sportsspectrum.com, for all of our content. Click that follow or subscribe app button. Click that follow or subscribe button on whatever app you're listening to this podcast on so that you don't miss any more episodes of Sports Spectrum's podcast. And then please do join us next time for another conversation right here on the show. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we will see you soon.